Oh, hello.
Signs everywhere, signs. I don't know the rest of the song. But I'm a hand, honey. Do this, don't do that. Don't you read the signs?
Moment ago, you were, I know this is great for a podcast, but it was like a very like flock of seagulls with your like 12-year-old headset, video gamer headset.
I apologize for nothing. For nothing. I am, every day I slip a little bit closer into my resemblance of Jabba the Hutt. And I don't mean that as like a fat phobic thing, so don't send me an email. I just know that I am melting into my true form.
Your true essence.
My essence. By the way, I just wanted to bring this up real quick. My yoga nidras, I think, are getting weirder. Like,
Think?
I find myself talking more about the thinning of the veil. And if I were anybody else, I'd be like, "Ooh, bitch is getting weird." But I'm me, and so I kind of let it slide. And I wonder, is this how people make the descent into multi-tiered marketing scheme madness?
It's possible. What are you gonna sell? Are you gonna go the oils route, or are you gonna create your own multi-level marketing product?
I am really tired of people selling me shit. Let me say that again for the people in the back. I'm really fucking tired. Okay, let me really be clear. Services I'm okay with. You got a skill? Cool. I'm sick of health and wellness people, yoga teachers, teaming up with brands they love to share clothing, fashion products. And I no longer, before I jumped down my own throat and say, yeah, but everybody's just trying to put food on the plate. Everybody's just trying to, no. No. That is not what this is. Because it's never the teachers that you know are like hustling. It's never the fucking working class teachers. And honestly, I think we should make the dis we should talk about what distinguishes an upper middle class yoga teacher from a working class teacher. Let's talk about that down the road. But it is never the working class teacher who's like, hey, look, I just teamed up with fucking ALO or Athleta or whoever, and they gave me this free outfit. And look at it. Doesn't it look great? You should totally buy it. You should buy it. Oh, they don't make it for your body size. If you take my class more, your body will look like mine and your skin will lighten up like mine too. And
God.
I'm just furious. I'm furious at consumer capitalism and fucking yoga. I'm so sicked out and grossed out by yoga teachers fucking selling shit. They're selling shame. They're selling classism. They're selling a sense of lack and want and incompleteness. And you can get a little closer to that breath of fresh energy and life
And
force, if you just slip into this fucking sports bra.
even the selling of abundance is the selling of lack. Do you notice this? If you could just take on an attitude of abundance, then all will be well.
Ryan, it's not only bad, it's like it's so. Like, I want to use a stronger word. It's malicious. I do. I think, and I don't care if they don't see it that way. I don't care if that's not their intention.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's doing. That's what it's fucking doing. And, the other thing that I follow some like influencers in the different parenting communities, subsets and what have you. And I just saw recently, like, you know, some lady that had three kids, she was feeling not great and had put on a bunch of weight. And she's like, but I'm going to put on my bathing suit and play with my kids. That was it. The whole thing was like, fuck it. Like, just put on the bathing suit and go be. Just exist. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to exist, was the heart of the post. And, you know, I'd say 90% of the people were positive and like, yay, I needed to hear this today. And then there was 10% that were like, yes, but your body is your temple and you should really put in extra effort to care for it. It's the only one you have. And disease is so prevalent in this country. And I just like watching that conversation and the number of the people that it just this sort of growing chorus of like just absolute disdain. Mm-hmm. These like, for the most part, these white women have for policing other people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like just ignorance, just fucking ignorance. Why do you think people gain weight? Let's do the math. Because you think they're lazy? You think they're lazy and bad? They're stupid and lazy and smelly and bad, and you are good and pure and clean and a hard worker. Your people, your ancestry is better, hardworking people that have endured suffering so that you could be gritty and resilient and thin. And look at you, you're doing it now. But everybody else, if they would just work harder the way you and your people did. That's what the fucking, like, right underneath the surface of this is just fucking bizarre.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, it's not that far underneath the surface sometimes.
You're right, there is no surface. It's like right there. And I just don't understand how we haven't, like, burned down more houses.
Yeah, well, I... If you want an uplifting documentary recommendation, I went down the rabbit hole of watching all 4 hours of the new HBO documentary "Exterminate All the Brutes" by Raoul Peck, and it is so well done. It is not an uplifting. Not enough listening experience, and I do not know why I watched all 4 hours at once, but definitely worth watching. Just a lot of connections and a lot of in terms of how colonialism, imperialism, white supremacy, all of this, it is all wrapped up in everything, and it is all very much hidden from the history that we get taught sometimes.
Okay, so that's my homework assignment this week. I'm gonna watch that.
Not all 4 hours at once. that was a mistake.
I just find myself in a crescendo of fervor lately around, and I just feel like it's, you know, I wish that I had been, that's a useless notion. I was going to say, I wish I had seen this with more clarity in my youth, but that's neither here nor there. But I think one of the things I'm struggling with that ties into all of that is just how willing we are to allow so many people to suffer from lack of food and resources and healthy foods and resources and healthcare. And I'm feeling hardened toward people who seemingly have unending access to these things. I'm struggling with some caste shit. It's some class shit. I just, it makes me so sad and angry, and, you know, realizing on a personal level that I'm always teetering on the edge of, like, you know, all of us. And I even feel shame saying it. Like, I'm struggling to say it because I feel like shame, like, don't say that out loud. People will think you're trashy. But the truth is, it's true for just about everybody I know, that we're one bad decision or one bad stroke of luck away from being homeless.
Yeah.
You know, or not being able to buy healthy food, or, you know, and it deserves to be said out loud, because if it's uncomfortable to say out loud, that means that there are internalized forces at play that are making us feel like saying that out loud isn't good, because as soon as we say it out loud, as soon as you give things air, as soon as you breathe life into them in the form of saying things out loud, they take on a new life. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives it animus. And so I think it's important to say out loud that as somebody that is fully employed, well educated, and surrounded by family and friends, somebody who is fortunate is, you know, still just one sneeze away from disaster. And that's true for so many of us. And yet we don't talk about it. And it's just like, okay, it's just okay. Like, in our culture, for people to not be okay, just completely not okay. Okay, there, I've said it. How are you? That's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's been a couple weeks since maybe it's just been 1 week since we recorded, because time has no meaning. But we were trying to figure out the timeline beforehand. So it was like Turfy podcast on a Monday. I recorded the sort of long-winded rant of a podcast on the Friday. And then the following Monday, Jay responded with a apology, sort of, and I don't really want to get into Jay, because I feel like there's been enough. There's been enough. And like the thing that still is really kind of striking about that whole week, was that it was supposed to be this, you know, whole trans day of visibility, and, you know, there are people reaching out and yeah, lots of people reaching out, and I really appreciate everybody and their support, or just sort of, yeah, I really appreciate all of their support. And the thing that was like overwhelming to me was that on that Wednesday, I think it was, when it was supposed to be Trans Day of Visibility, I was like, I just want to be invisible. Like, I don't want to see anyone. I don't want to be seen by anyone. I don't want to, like, I'm just so, yeah, it was a very interesting contrast to everything that I was, you know. And then you go through the whole thing, like, oh, well, like, I should say something publicly about this day. And I was like, I don't have to do that. Instagram is not the sole source of soul, what's the word I'm looking for?
Avenue.
It's not the only avenue to show support and to do necessary work. And I'm not saying that Instagram isn't useful in some ways, because I do think it's actually useful in there's a use for it, especially in bringing some level of awareness to things that are unfolding. And yeah, and I think I just got to a point by the end of that week where I was like, I just don't want to talk about this anymore. Which actually felt kind of shitty, because I do want to talk about this. And I think the reason why I got there is because because of a lot of what I was speaking about on the last episode, of just like not feeling blank enough, that like I didn't deserve to like speak out, which is sort of a reflection when I'm like called out on a show with a big microphone for an explicit apology, because it makes me feel like, oh, in some ways I'm standing as a some sort of marker for queerness or transness or whatever. And that I think will always, as someone who is white and is oftentimes perceived as a man, like that always feels very uncomfortable to me, because I'm like, there are other folks who like have been doing this work for way, way longer. I in many ways am still a baby in this exploration of my own stuff around gender and yeah, and it just it was a weird, it was a weird week. But then, you know, in contrast to that, I'm back in person seeing folks for body work one-on-one, and it feels so amazing to like actually engage with people in a room and not over a screen. Even if it's only two or three people a week, it's like, it just feels amazing. And tiring, because I have lost any sort of stamina that I had to do that work. It's sort of like the manual skill, like the hands skill did not go away, but my ability to like sustain doing that for a whole day went like completely out the window.
Yeah, I'm going to give you unsolicited advice to honor that, because building up the ability to do like five sessions in a day isn't normal. Like, yeah. That is not and I'm just going to speak with love for all of the body workers in my life who have had to hit the override button for decades so that they can cram in enough sessions to make a living, and how detrimental it has been for their physical and mental health to build the chops and the endurance to do that is like,
yeah,
not a good thing.
But I only made that mistake once. That was a first day back mistake. And I walked out into Davis Square afterwards and was like,
where is the earth? Where is the sky? Where are my bones?
What just happened to me?
I did the same thing with teaching the other day. Like, I am notorious for, like, let me set some healthy boundaries for myself and not work too much. And then I don't really. Well, I'm just sort of like a yes person in terms of, like, taking on new ventures. And I think if I, you know, examine where that comes from, it's probably from some of it is, like, I just like working and I enjoy my work and I do. And then there's also a part of me that's like, you better say fucking yes to everything, you ungrateful twat. You know, like, there's a little bit of that in there. But I found myself for the first time in a while coming up against a wall. And I was like, I don't think I'm good at what I'm doing.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of appalled that I'm allowed to be in public making a living. And, like, that's not useful. And I hear myself say it out loud. This is a therapy session, by the way. I hear myself saying that out loud and realize it's not reasonable that I have skills that I have worked for and honed over a lifetime. And I think I just need a break. Honestly, I think everybody does, but fuck everybody. I got to talk about me right now. I haven't taken a vacation in a really long time, and I think my fucking shit is getting weird. And I don't know how to do that.
A vacation.
Well, I don't know how to do that.
I don't know how to do that either. Our Catholicism is showing.
Holy shit. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've got, first of all, you have to spend about a half a week of labor figuring out how to take the vacation, like, yes, how to get people to cover your classes, which is like another fucking thing. And this is not unique to my studio. This is every fucking studio I've ever worked at. And it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's unpaid labor for you to labor to find somebody to cover your labor.
Like, yeah.
So I just am like, okay, eventually I'll end up in the ER and then I'll have my vacation. No, it's fucked, Ryan. There's part of me that thinks that. I'm like, okay, I think I feel like a low-key seizure coming. I'll figure out getting classes covered when I'm dead. <You know? laughs> And, like, I it feels good to say that out loud. I don't know. I just...
Well, but this is, I mean, this is the... I think part of the struggle with this always is, like, there are people who are just out there teaching yoga as, like, a side gig, and they have a other job that is like, you know, they, if they lost their yoga teaching income, they would not be hurting for anything. And so when you have, you know, even if you see that, like, you've got a staff of like 100 teachers, but if more than half of them are falling on towards the side of that situation,
they're not picking up classes.
They're not picking up classes to sub because we don't get paid enough. And anybody who says that like yoga teachers don't get, if you really look at the number of, I don't know, if you really like broke down the pay like across the board, I think people would be appalled at how little is actually made when you take into account, you know, with the exception of you know, a handful of teachers who maybe like have some sort of higher kind of deal with whatever studio they work at where they're getting compensated differently. Usually what I have seen at studios is that there are teachers who do make enough money, and then there are teachers that don't. And if you just, and that's usually based on some sort of attendance model. And then if you really added everything up together and like found some consensus on like, what does everyone think that a class should be worth? You'd probably end up with the same payroll cost to the company anyway, and everyone would be at the 6 a.m. class with 10 people in it, or the, you know, 7 o'clock restorative class is being bolstered by the, you know, 5:45 class with 60 people in it. Now, of course, are we ever going to be able to have 60 people in a yoga class ever again? No one fucking knows. So, you know, all of the economics of this are completely out the window. But, you know, one of the things that I really hope that people are doing in studios is completely reimagining what this looks like. Because, like, we can try to go back to how it was before, but, like, how fucking depressing. Like, this is the opportunity to change some shit. And I don't see a lot of studios doing that. I see a lot of teachers doing that, just saying, fuck this. I'm kind of like, I'm going to work for myself, or I'm not going to teach yoga. Because I just can't anymore. Like, it's just, that's the conclusion I've come to. It's like, I've done this for too long. I know too much. It's hard to step back into a position where, you know, I'm dependent on a place for my living. If I'm dependent on me for my living, then, like, great. Because if I crash and burn, I crash and burn. But I see a lot of teachers taking their own, you know, taking up some agency in terms of what they're doing. And I do think that that's a really positive change. I just wish I would also see more of that on the studio side.
I'm just having a hard time. I personally, you know, in some ways I have all the skills I need to, like, go off on my own. I don't really want to.
Yeah.
I enjoy being part of, like, a team of people. I like students bouncing around between teachers. I like a lot of that kind of thing. And I don't like to encourage, you know, and I'm not saying that people going off on their own are doing this, but I don't like encouraging, like, you know, just practice the bulk with me. And then it doesn't feel right to me. It's not my thing. But I would do it in a heartbeat if I was in a different place in my life. I'm just not in that place. The thing that I am struggling with is, like, at what point, like, I am, I think I'm really struggling with the feeling. I say this. I feel like the way I think about things is like an extracurricular or a little tokeny. And I am not wild about I'm just not really feeling like I'm feeling farther and farther away from power yoga and hot yoga. And it was really, it's a wonderful gateway drug. I do think that. I think it can be. But I also think it can be like a form of self-flagellation. And what is the word I'm looking for? Martyrdom. I'm just so disinterested in using, being around people that use yoga asana as a form of self-flagellation and martyrdom, as if the body is to be tamed and the body is wrong and needs discipline. All of those things are at their heart and soul deeply classist and racist, like the underpinnings of those, of that philosophical approach to asana, is mired in things that I do not align with anymore. And I don't think it's good for the soul and for the spirit of most humans.
Yeah.
And if you point to me and show me teachers that, you know, do it and love it and whatever, that's great. Like, I don't think that they're bad people. I just, what I see time and time again is people coming into my class with injuries. You know, and this is old. I know we've talked about this before, but I'm just still seeing it, you know, like people coming in with injuries, people coming in because they cannot do it anymore. And like, what the fuck is that? When you have the kind of practice where like somebody can't go to your class because they did so many fucking chaturangas or whatever with you that now they gotta.
But isn't that the, I mean, this to me gets a little bit back to, is this, what are we actually trying to teach people? If we're teaching people that the expression of yoga is what they do when they come into a classroom, like, then it's always going to be like, okay, in order to practice yoga, you have to constantly be coming back and paying for services, which is bullshit. Like, there has to be at some point a self-sufficiency where someone feels like they can practice on their own in a way that isn't dependent upon a teacher. Certainly it can be helped by a teacher, and it can be guided by a teacher, and it can, you know, or it could just be that you come to class because you enjoy being with other people and hanging out with that teacher. That's totally fine. But like, the number of times, especially when I talk about people learning to practice for themselves, that people are just so demoralized and like, I just don't think I'm ever going to be able to do it right. Usually referring to the asana. And it's just like,
well, what the fuck is right? Who told you what is right? Who told you?
But it, like, it's so, it's hard to, because part of what's essential in learning to practice for yourself is there has to be like a zooming out of like what is included in practice for you. And if all that someone can point to as practice is triangle pose, side angle, warrior two, you know, that whole shtick, then like people can get really caught up and they're like, okay, am I doing this right? Am I holding it for the right amount of time? Am I flowing well? Am I like, what, like whatever the case may be. But it, to me, like, part of me always comes back to like, that's the fundamental flaw, is that there is one of the fundamental flaws, is that we've shifted from, this is a service that people can consume. Sorry, we've shifted to, this is a service that people can consume, versus this is a practice that is worthwhile and I can teach you some things. You see this from a public class standpoint, you see it from a teacher training standpoint, you see it from a workshop standpoint. It's like, I fundamentally have no problem with someone really wanting to learn how to do a handstand. Like, I really have no problem with that. But meaning comes in context, as my teacher likes to say. So like, if the context is that doing a handstand is what makes you a yoga practitioner, then that sets the stage for a yoga divorce. And I actually was saying this to a friend the other day. I think one of the one of the best things that we've ever I don't know whether it was an episode or multiple episodes, but basically there was a point early in the podcast we were talking about, we don't trust anyone who hasn't had a yoga divorce. You're still muted.
You missed a really big sigh and a yup.
It's like there has to be that.
Because I mean, quite frankly, I don't trust anybody who hasn't had a divorce.
Cheers. because we all enter into this world of power yoga or vinyasa or Bikram, or, you know, we enter into this world where it's been commodified, and it has to be commodified because otherwise we wouldn't have spaces to practice. And, you know, the pulling on the thread there could go back quite a ways. But at what point is it just and the thing that kind of infuriates me is like the moving it back towards an education, or just not education, sounds too like grandiose, towards just learning something is always pointed in the direction of teacher training as this like vocation that you could pick up, as opposed to like a practice that you could just learn to do for yourself in a way that was helpful for you. And I don't really know how to solve that, other than just doing my thing haphazardly over here with other humans who share the same view as I do.
I mean, it's a privileged position to, I was just thinking in my head, oh gosh, I just sometimes want to tell people not to do teacher trainings. And then I was like, oh, isn't that nice for you to be able to say after you went through one and got the opportunity to teach and do something you love. So I think the thing I'm struggling with is just unhitching the livelihoods of studios from teacher trainings is the thing that I think is a valuable
if I've said it once
exercise.
I will say it 1,000 times. The yoga studio that can figure out how to survive without teacher trainings is the yoga studio that will be the most successful yoga studio that I have ever seen in my life.
Then students have to pay more, and students don't value. Honestly, like to pay more for a drop-in class
in Boston, sure, but I do think there are still, I mean, we to pay more for a drop-in class, like, I don't know. I still think it's the scale has gotten so big that there's no stepping back from. Got to have a teacher training. Got to have a membership model. Got to have, you know, what in essence is like a $15 drop-in, once you factor in all of the discounts that people are getting. It's just that's the way. It's like too baked in.
I just think I'd have, I am today at this moment of recording feeling so jaded about health and wellness communities and yoga and meditation communities. You know, I'm part of that year-long training, and I want to climb out of my skin. Not from the practice, but from the affect around the practice.
Yep.
I am so sicked out, and I've been trying to like hold my tongue on that one, but everybody's looking for Jesus. Everybody wants to find their personal Jesus. Everybody wants to find a guy that's probably darker skinned, but they want to see him light skinned with a beard and some skinny abs. Show me your Jesus. Show me Jesus. Who do you follow? Who is true? Who do you love? Who do you give your money to? Who's going to save you?
That was great.
That was not great. That was terrible. Like, even for me, that was bad. My point is, everybody just wants a Nirvana t-shirt and to be a cool kid.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's doing. Who do I give my money to be the cool kid? You're not. We're all geeks. It's okay.
We're all geeks.
You know what it is? I am so done with the whole Catholic idea of exporting your agency and understanding and direct communication with God to the papacy and to the church. You know, because we don't want people to be able to read. We don't want people to have a direct line of communication with God. Fucking Martin Luther and, you know, every branch of Protestantism is an attempt to answer that. Like the Baptists, like, no, you're going to have a direct relationship with God. You're going to read the fucking Bible yourself. And that's the last thing Catholics wanted. Like when we just look at history. And it's the same fucking thing in yoga. No, you've got to come to my special class. It is capped at this many teachers, this many students are allowed in, and you got to pay this much to continue to learn with your Jesus. What? Fuck you! What are you pissing that is so precious that these people, after 10 years of studying, you still need to come back? Come on, you haven't been alive that long. You're making it up on the fly now. Show me one more different way to do Parvrita Janusha Shasana. Go home and fist myself. Come on. This is horse shit. It's a lie. It is a lie. It is a performance. You don't need it anymore. Let go. You have God inside you. You're muted. And so now I just sound crazy. Yeah, you still are. Fix it, Ryan. It's cold out here. Okay, I think I heard a giggle.
Can you hear me now?
Thank God, yes.
Just, I was imagining how in Parvrita Janusha Shasana you would go home and fist yourself.
You know I have a long torso and short arms. It'll be a struggle. Everybody's looking for their authority because heaven forbid they make a decision on their own. Give me a polished God is what people want as a product. Give me a polished representation of something that I can aspire to be. No, that is sickness.
I mean, that is a dynamic for sure. And I think, I do think there are folks out there who have been teaching for a long time, and it's very much this vibe of like, yeah, come practice if you want. And yes, within those communities, there's some really annoying human beings.
Acolytes. Apostles.
And I think sometimes there's a confusion of like, do you, I don't know how to say this. There can be an appreciation of what you've learned from a person at the same time that there is confidence that you do not want to exactly emulate them.
Yeah, okay. Well, where the fuck is that message? Because all I'm seeing right now is come take my paint by number class, get wicked good at my fucking paint by number.
And
don't
you, know
you dare, don't you dare paint on your own. Oh shit, you did it wrong. You're going to hurt yourself. Oh God, you're going to hurt your students too.
I mean, I also appreciate having run the aforementioned teacher trainings before, how hard it is to get people to not just imitate. Like, that's actually really, really, really hard. And every training that I've run over the years, there's been a moment in the process of practice teaching with folks, especially towards the end of the training, where I feel like a failure because I feel like they're just like reiterating what I or we, if there were multiple teachers, said without necessarily having like a full understanding of it yet. And then I can soften around that and say like, okay, well, this was a year-long program or a six-month program or a four-month program. Like, maybe they don't have it integrated enough to try and like find their own words or understanding about it. And that's fine, because that's a process. But I think what I am seeing out there is what I always see, which is it's become entirely about how do I teach this and not about how do I practice it. Because practicing is hard. Because you got to be with your own shit. Kate is in a deep, pensive moment.
I think that you're right. And I also think that there is a financial benefit for a lot of teachers to keep their students dependent on.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
I don't like it.
100%.
Also, I meant to bring this up because this kind of ticked me off. Talking about learning students' names, and I was...
Oh.
Yeah, the Yoga is Dead podcast was like, that's a way to trauma and, you know, help make your class trauma-informed is learn your students' names. And I actually wanted to push back against that because it's actually just a marketing technique. If you're learning people's names to create the performance of intimacy, that's manipulative. And that's actually creating a space wherein it's – in some religions, it's sacrilegious to say the name of God because having somebody's name is an intimacy and it is a power to call their attention. And so historically, having a name for God was disrespectful to God. Does that make sense? You know, this is like a thing. Now, when I am thinking about creating a class where people have choice, like, no. No, you don't have to disclose shit. If you need privacy here, you get fucking privacy here. If you want to have a relationship with me, you can have one. Like, and every teacher training I'm in, it's like, learn their names, learn their names, learn their names. And it's like, well, okay, so to what end?
Yeah. Well, I also...
I will learn names if people want me to learn names. Like,
yeah.
But I will not seek names in order to manipulate a feeling of false intimacy.
I also feel like... You know, obviously over the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot of, like, stuff going around about this is how you make a classroom LGBT friendly. And you know, there are people out there saying very nuanced things about this, but I just want to also say that, like, if you as a teacher do not feel comfortable with the reaction, with any of the number of reactions that might come from asking people for their pronouns, like, maybe just, like, continue doing your own work. And if people share their pronouns with you, then, like, great. That's a sign of, you know, that they feel, I would take that as a sign that someone feels comfortable with me. But there are definitely and you know, historically at Bow Street, we would always I would always go around the room and ask everyone to introduce themselves. And I think I wouldn't have done that if the classes weren't so small. I think there's a scale at which it's like, A, I don't want to take the time, and B, it feels really like a lot to introduce yourself to that many people.
Does this sound like horseshit when I say, when you do it, it feels different? Like, when you do it, it feels like you are, the class was small. It was a small one room studio. It actually felt like a workshop. But
it also felt
like a workshop.
It also felt like silly to be sitting there with like four other people and not know who the hell they were, especially when I could like see their names on my body as I checked them in, right? Like, but we went, the staff at Bow Street, I remember we went like back and forth a lot about how do we address the pronoun issue. And like the best thing that we could come up with was, because I think we started from a place of always ask at the beginning of class as you're going around. And then we were like, oh, that doesn't work, because A, some people, I literally have had as a response to that, what's a pronoun?
Yeah, because it's a bougie ass fucking question.
So there's that. And then there's the truth of like, if I put myself into a position, like, especially if I was traveling somewhere, like how fun would it be to actually travel somewhere again? And I went into a studio, like I would imagine a day where I wouldn't, in a room full of strangers, necessarily want to disclose my pronouns, especially if we have gone around the room and no one else or like everybody else in the room has he, him, she, hers pronouns, you know, like I would all of a sudden feel like a little, am I okay here? What's happening? So the thing that I think we eventually landed on was, when we did introductions, if the teacher felt comfortable, the teacher would share their pronouns and then they would just go around the room. And some people would give their pronouns and some people wouldn't. But it was never a like, say your name and pronoun. It was just like, introduce yourself. And the teacher, if they felt comfortable, would kind of model that pattern of introducing themselves and their pronouns. But it's so one of those things that can get quickly whether it's trauma-informed classrooms or classrooms that are trying to feel inclusive to people who are historically marginalized, like, we so quickly run to the, like, these are the five things that we can do. Here's a listicle. Here's a something that's easy to put on an Instagram slide. And that's great. But it's always more nuanced than that. And I absolutely believe that it is the teacher and their own work, whether it is explicit or just implicit or private, I should say, and the culture of the studio led by whoever is leading it, that is going to create a space that feels safe and inclusive and less so. You know, policies are of course part of that, right? But it's more the actual work that the teachers and the people who are running the studio are doing to understand those experiences. And it's not as simple as always learn names, never learn names, always say pronouns, never say pronouns.
No, and it's also like, okay, so that just assumes that every teacher is capable of remembering all of those names.
When there's more than 15 people in the room, I do not do introductions like that because I will never remember.
I mean, it's just so fucking judgy. Like, if you if you have memory deficits or disability or ADHD or on the spectrum, like, there's a lot of memory things that can come up. And it's like, well, fuck you for telling every teacher that they have to have this ability. And yep. It's an ability, and also it's a weapon, and it's just like you said, it's a gray area. So fuck you for your absolutism. I'm over it. I just feel like such a negative Nelly today.
You negative? Never. Never.
That's how I have my lover's quarrel with this life. I am in an Elizabeth Taylor Burton marriage divorce cycle. Didn't they get married and divorced like 4 times?
I can't remember.
Something like that.
I feel like there was something else.
Oh, we got to read the text. The text, that was a work of art.
Okay. I'm going to.
But there were other things.
So this is Kate's response to when should we record? And I quote, topic, don't sell me stuff. I'm not well. I have to go now. Topic, teacher auditions. Topic, you're fat. Calm down. Topic, you're still gonna die. Topic, rich people are evil. My response to the first slew of text. Haha, and when are we recording this one? Continues. Topic, I think I mean that. Monday or Tuesday? ? Topic, snake oil, witches, you are all sick. Like sick horseshoe fish. Sick psychic death rattle. Our species is in decline. Yes, Monday at 9. Topic. Nothing will keep you safe. Thank you.
That feels, yeah. Nothing will keep you safe. Like sick horseshoe fish.
Sick. They're not psychic. Sick psychic death rattle. Our species is in decline. Yes, you know, Monday at 9. Yeah. You got a rhyme in there too.
Monday at 9. So here's how we know the species is in decline, because we're all okay. We are all like cool with homelessness and people with food insecurity. We're okay with people not having access to adequate healthcare. We're okay with that. Like, as a species, that means we are infected with a thought and spirit virus that is allowing us to to let our family perish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no other way around it. We're infected with some sort of, as a species, when we allow ourselves to fall apart, it means there's disease. There is a larger systemic disease happening. And it's actually really comforting in a Richard Russell, whatever his fucking name is, Brand sort of way, to, even though he's pumping a bunch of fucking Kundalini shit right now. It is actually, I think, quite accurate to step back and look at all of the inequities as a species acquired virus, because it doesn't make sense for anybody's well-being. It doesn't help rich people. It doesn't help poor people, obviously, you know? And I don't know what the answer is. I think we're probably just going to die out.
Probably.
Is that...
That's a great way to...
And maybe we deserve to.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not deserving or... Maybe it's okay, in other words. I think it's okay. We basically had the opportunity to come onto this planet and, like, eat cherries and lay in the grass, like that fucking thing I saw on Instagram that I loved. But instead, we were like, oh, let's create a fucking caste system and class system and just, like, work all day and be fucking horrible to each other. I'm right, and you know it. I'm creating a goatee out of double chin flesh. How do we feel about
that? Yeah.
Eat the rich.
I think we should probably call this one.
Yeah.
Bye. Oh God, is it over?